North Idaho News of the Week is brought to you in part by Evergreen Realty, commercial and residential property listings. Online at evergreen-realty.com. Good morning. You've tuned in to North Idaho News of the Week here on 88.5 KRFY. I'm Jack Peterson, and I'm here with Chris Bessler. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Jack. How are you?
I'm doing very well. And yourself?
Yeah, it's a glorious day out there.
Nice weekend coming up. Yeah. And we are joined as well by our guest, Zach Hagedon from the Sandpoint Reader. Good morning, Zach.
Good morning.
Nice to have you here, too, on a beautiful autumn day. Our top stories today, just to hop right into it, here in Sandpoint, the Sandpoint City Council met to discuss the comprehensive plan, which was tabled after a lively three-hour meeting in order to gather more input from the public. Also in Sandpoint, and related to that, the Russell Sports Complex has faced some pushback at City Hall. Protesters gathered to oppose construction of the sports complex and the destruction of trees at Traverse Park. And at least one protester has chained herself to a tree at Traverse Park as of this morning. In statewide news, the House and Senate did not reach an agreement, and the Republican presidential caucus will take place on March 2nd of next year. The primary is set for statewide office on May 21st. Up in Bonner's Ferry, Dick Staples is no longer the mayor, but is running unopposed for re-election. So that simple story that we talked about last week is a little more complicated because he may be re-elected to his position against his, perhaps against his will.
Apparently he will, because he's the only candidate on the ballot.
Yeah, and then whether or not his son, I believe, has a position with the city will determine whether he takes the oath of office or not on January 2nd. And then lastly, the Department of Environmental Quality is seeking comment on their Black Rock cleanup plan, which is hoping to bring public lake access to the city of Ponderay in what they call the Front Yard Project. Those are the top stories that I noticed. Did I miss anything, Chris?
Well, there's some other things we might talk about a bit. Yeah. There's a health advisory for Lake Kokalala because of some poisonous bacteria that's happening there. There was a eco flight over Scotchman Peaks Wilderness. It actually, all three of us.
All of us were on that flight. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was for the media and some elected representatives and board members. Worth a mention, maybe. And, of course, we'll talk about the city elections coming up, because there is a forum coming on October 17th for Sandpoint City Council and mayor candidates, as well as Lake Ponderay School District. So those are things we will talk about.
Mm-hmm. First, shall we do a Sandpoint sound? And you guys are, I think Chris knows what this is. We'll see if Zach can guess.
Okay, Zach, you'll probably figure it out, but you have to guess where the sound was taken.
All right.
That's it.
Well, is it too much of a pedestrian guess to say that's the lake?
That is the lake.
You're correct.
Yes. All right. Well,
Lake Ponderay.
I know my Sandpoint sounds.
Yeah.
As recorded at City Beach by one of our listeners, Phil Huff. So throw a shout out there. If you have a sound that you collect this week, send it in to us here at KRFY, and it could be a Sandpoint sound that we play.
Yeah. That was, I think he said he recorded that at City Beach.
At City Beach, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Which is where I think I may make my last trip of the year sometime this weekend. We might go back down to the beach because it's supposed to be so nice.
And I will throw a shout out. If you're a boat owner and you have a boat in the marinas, the lake level is dropping at a precipitous rate right now. So you don't want to have your boat left high and dry.
Mm-hmm.
Take care to get your boat out of the water here. especially at City Beach, because the Windbag Marina, the marinas there do get dewatered.
In the days when I was responsible for taking a boat out of the lake, we were always like the second to last one. If we were the last one, then I got pretty nervous. I felt okay as long as there was at least one boat left in there. Anyway, let's talk about the news and dive into it. Zach, you were at the Sandpoint City Council meeting for that meeting, and then you saw the protest outside, I suppose, for the Russell Sports Complex. What was your Wednesday night like? What was your impression of the events there?
Well, I should clarify, I wasn't there in person. Okay. I watched the city's live stream. But yeah, it was a bruiser. That was a long Wednesday night. Mm-hmm. Longer for some than others. The protest that you referred to took place before the meeting. Mm-hmm. I guess, close to 100 people maybe, from what I heard, showed mm-hmm. up about an hour before the meeting started. And they were there to sort of show their displeasure with the city's decision of, I guess it was the meeting of the 27th, September 27 meeting, where they finalized the contracts for the James E. Russell Sports Center at Traverse Park, mm-hmm. Which has been in the works for more than a year. I want to say it was early spring 2022 when the city received $7.5 million from the Russell family to be used for a tennis and pickleball enclosed sports center, which the city wanted to locate at Traverse.
And they better put a basketball court in there. Just saying.
Well, I think the design is ongoing, but mm-hmm. I don't know if they're going to include anything other than tennis and pickleball. That seems to be their main jam there. But so that project, as I say, has been ongoing for a while, and it became clear over the past couple of months, at least, that siting that facility at Traverse Park would require removing about 20 trees from the park, and that has really riled up a lot of folks who say that there's no reason those trees should go. Those trees are healthy, they're big, they're economically valuable, they're ecologically valuable, they're aesthetically pleasing. Don't cut down the trees, move the sports center somewhere else. Now, that discussion has gone on for months in the letters to the editor section of our paper and others. Folks have gotten up and repeatedly spoken about it at meetings. It came down to the vote on the 27th, and the city decided they were going to keep it at the Travers. They approved the contracts, done deal. Well, a lot of people didn't like that, and so they showed up at the city hall last Wednesday and wanted to express their displeasure. They showed up en masse into the meeting once it started, and they all had come with statements prepared to speak during the public forum section of the meeting, which is 20 minutes dedicated at the beginning of the meeting to talk about whatever you want to talk about. However, there are some rules to what you can and can't talk about during public forum, and one of those rules is you can't bring up stuff that is on the agenda for that evening, so you save your comments for when that comes up, or you don't speak about things that have already been voted on and decided. Now, the city had decided on this issue, so when folks started getting up and wanting to talk about it, Mayor Shelby Ronstadt, who was zooming in from, I'm not sure where, but he wasn't there in person, but he was zooming in, he shut him down and said, "We're not going to be hearing comment on this issue. We've already decided it. Please abide by the rules." That got pretty heated. Folks were not happy that they'd showed up at 5:30 p.m. and had done a protest earlier with the intent to speak about this issue, and then they were being told that they couldn't talk about it. So that made the public forum section pretty rowdy.
Testy, yeah.
Lots of frustration in the room. Even watching it remotely, I could kind of feel it coming through the computer monitor. People still managed to speak their mind while kind of skating around the specifics of Traverse Park and all that. And what they really kind of centered on was the perceived lack of public involvement, that they weren't being listened to, that the city was just kind of running away with decisions without listening to what the actual community wanted. And, you have 20 minutes to say that stuff. And I think the council heard that. I don't know that they necessarily agreed, but, that sort of faded away. And then the meeting moved into the public hearing, which, centered on the big item on the agenda, which was the comprehensive plan. And the comp plan, was adopted in 2009, and it's supposed to be updated every 10 years. So we began that process in 2019, and it began in earnest. They got a plan or two, a couple of components finished, and then COVID happened. So we had about a two-year gap where that effort was paused. They came back to it in 2022 and worked on it until, you know, last Wednesday, which was going to be the final vote on the plan going forward for the next 10, 20 years. After a lot of discussion and given, you know, the events earlier in the meeting where people expressed a lot of displeasure with feeling like they're not being included in the plan and the decisions, they decided to table it, and now we're going to have a town hall workshop coming up. We don't know when. I asked the city if they had a date, and they said to be determined, so I guess we just wait and see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, they did have a public comment on the plan when they were working on it prior to COVID hitting. But it's been kind of light for public comment, I'd say. And this, since then, as they brought this forward, they had a survey on the website. But I think there were, I don't know if you know the number there. They didn't have a very big response on their survey.
Yeah, I reported a couple of months back on a P&Z meeting. So Planning and Zoning looked at that that online questionnaire. I think it was 200-something responses. And as I recall, I don't have my notes in front of me, but P&Z Commissioner Mo Dunkel felt like that was not enough by a large
yeah. mark. Yeah, for a document that's supposed to guide the the growth of the community for the next 10 to 20 mm-hmm. years, right?
There was a lot of public engagement, I think, off and on the comp plan. You know, the city was very keen to highlight that at the meeting this past Wednesday, with the surveys and workshops and things like that. And we've reported numerous times on the progress of this plan. But it still seemed to take some people by surprise on Wednesday that they were voting on this, you know, as a final document. I mean, even Councilor Jason Welker was like, I feel like I've only had 4 days to dive into this. Mm-hmm. And he was the one who brought the motion to table the decision and then kick it back to the public for that town hall workshop. And then I think there will be a workshop with the council following that, and then another public hearing. Mm-hmm. So we're going to have multiple opportunities to look at this plan in a lot more depth. Mm-hmm. And I felt like a lot of people were really happy that we kind of pumped the brakes on it. Mm-hmm.
So in your story, you reported that there was some comment that that language from the 2009 plan that denied the extension of urban services for low-density development within the area city impact was eliminated or changed, I guess. And that the intent of that was to help consolidate development in already developed areas, right?
Right, right.
And that's no longer part of the plan. Is that correct?
That was the big – I mean, there were a lot of things that people had comments on. I mean, councilors went – you know, some councilors went line by line making adjustments and asking questions and things. But what really, I think, tipped the scales to wanting to hold off on making a final decision was that item that you just mentioned. So Jeremy Grimm, the former city planner, mayoral candidate, and Kyle Schreiber, who's running for city council, a frequent – visitor to council meetings. Both of those gentlemen, during the public hearing portion of the comp plan part of the meeting, highlighted that part. I think Kyle Schreiber was the first one to bring it up, saying, oh, I can't help but notice that we had language in the 2009 comp plan that specifically denied extending services into these areas that, you know, aren't incorporated but are still within our area of city impact. Now I see that language is gone. And that seems, you know, conspicuously absent. Why did we do that? And then Jeremy Grimm also said, yeah, I mean, this is a thing that we did back in the day specifically to keep growth consolidated.
Mm-hmm. Now, to prevent urban sprawl, basically, right. Yeah.
Grimm at the time of the last comp plan was the city planner.
He was integrally involved.
Yeah, and he's currently running for mayor
right.
as well.
Yeah, but so that touches specifically on the Providence subdivision out in Kootenai. I mean, that was the reason that I think that a lot of people were really keying into that issue. It's a 117-lot subdivision out in sort of the Kootenai area. It's still within the Sandpoint City area of city impact, but it's within also the Kootenai's area of city impact. And the city decided to give a will serve letter to the developer saying that, yeah, we'll extend city water out there so you can do this. Kootenai's not going to be doing it. And that's riled up a lot of people as well. Mm-hmm. So the reasoning for not having that language in the final draft of the updated comp plan was, you know, that we kind of want to keep a free hand while we negotiate with the county over what we're going to do with our area city impact. And that's a story that's going to develop in the next couple of months. But talking about it in the public hearing, you know, Councilor Welker said he generally thinks that it's a good idea that we don't have that language. that we keep it flexible while we negotiate. But still, he's like, you know, we're going to make a lot of problems for ourselves in the future if we don't address this out in the open. And that's why they decided to table it, I think, ultimately, was that that particular piece they felt was so important, considering the fact that we're going to be talking about whether we expand or shrink our area of city impact, and then how to manage that future extension of services needs to be really nailed down. And I think that, you know, folks in the community probably, it sounds like a really boring boring subject, but I do think it is like probably one of the most important parts of, mm-hmm. of what we're going to do going forward.
Well, it's, I mean, a comprehensive plan covers, I mean, every, well, it's comprehensive, right? I mean, this is transportation, utilities, land use, housing, recreation, like it's, this is like kind of the plan for the next 10 years. It's not, doesn't have the force of law specifically, right? I mean, you could, you know, people can, but it's the guiding principles for right. the
it's,
next yeah, 10
it's
years.
Not the zoning yeah. ordinances. Those have yeah. to be articulated in order to really set the mm-hmm. firm rules, but it, you're not supposed to come up with zoning ordinances that are contrary to the
right.
to the vision of the comprehensive plan.
And, that, yeah. and that's really what a comp plan is as well. I mean, in addition to giving sort of nuts and bolts direction, it's also a philosophical document.
Mm-hmm.
So it sets out the vision and the philosophy of where we want to go as a community. So,
how does this, if at all, relate to the downtown or the waterfront development plan that was the main topic of seemingly, you know, conversation over the mm-hmm. course of the summer with the city?
It's a component of the comp plan, and that's, I think, another thing that's sort of interesting and I think is valuable that we're holding off on approving it, is that part is a big piece of the comp plan. However, that design competition is still ongoing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So the results of that are not settled. And by holding off on approving the final comp plan, I think probably gives us a good chance of seeing that competition concluded so that mm-hmm. we can actually have a firm idea of what that looks like that gets rolled into this final plan.
Mm-hmm.
And as I understand it, there's a one of the final steps in that competition is occurring next week. I think the week of October 9th, there's going to be another presentation of the final plan because mm-hmm. they've gone through another round of revisions and whatnot. So there is a public opportunity to look at that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's coming right up, and people should mark the calendars for that. We should dig up when that's going to be, actually, and let people know.
Did anybody comment on that this should be postponed until kind of after the election? Was the fact that there's a citywide election coming up part of the conversation?
That was not mentioned specifically, but the presence of so many candidates for office at that meeting was telling that mm-hmm. they obviously see this as a as an opportunity to kind of get their message out there. I think almost every candidate for city office was at that meeting and spoke.
Mm-hmm. As they should be, really.
Well, yeah, I mean, you would hope they'd be there just regardless. But,
yeah, just to get informed on things, yeah.
Mm-hmm. If we have time, we should talk a little bit about that election, and especially about the forum that's coming up on October 17th, which you can listen to here on KRFY or attend in person at Community Hall, The Reader, and Sandpoint Online and KRFY are presenting that candidates forum to the public.
And we will be broadcasting that.
That's Jack. Right.
You'll make that happen.
I'm going to make that happen. Okay. I've checked it out. Yeah. It looks like it
should. But, of course, the great thing to do is be there in person at Community Hall on the 17th.
And we will have a candidates questionnaire in the October 12th paper.
Prior to the forum.
Next Thursday, the Sandpoint Reader will have a questionnaire hopefully filled out by every candidate mm-hmm. for city office. I've had confirmation from all of them mm-hmm. that they will participate in at least the questionnaire, and I think mm-hmm. almost all of them are going to be there in person at the forum. And then we'll have the LPOSD and the West Bonner County School District people in the questionnaire as well.
Mm-hmm. Good.
I think, do we have any more, anything more that needs to be said about the Russell Sports Complex protest as that's developing?
Well, I take food and water to Molly, I guess. Molly McCann, the protester who's chained herself to a tree out there. Yeah, she's well known around town, and she was a member of the city's. They have a urban forestry committee, and she was a member of that for many years. So she has trees in her heart. Certainly think she's showing that here with this protest. But the decision's already made. It's kind of hard to see
mm-hmm.
What what change there might be there, but we'll see.
Right. Yeah. It was a unanimous decision at the meeting on the 28th.
And we should say they are taking down about 20 trees, but they do plan to plant a whole bunch more. 60 is the number I've seen.
They said three times the number of trees they take, they're going to replant.
Yeah. And there's a playground there that's going to go away, but there will be another one
that's going to be ADA.
It's an all-inclusive playground. Yeah. It's even more than ADA.
When you're trying to place a facility like that, it is a question. Trying to move it to the northern fields, as was suggested, was going to actually take away one of those fields, as I understand it. So, and originally they intended to put it right where the current tennis courts are. That was the plan at the start of this. Actually went out and took a photograph of everybody out there because this was like the proposed site for it. And they got a lot of pushback from the tennis community, like, why take away these courts? So they did end up moving it a little bit to the west, I suppose. But in so doing, it's taken over the kids' playground. So the solution there was to move the kids' playground. But there are the trees.
Those courts do get a lot of use, I must say. I live near there, and they are occupied every day.
Yeah, and a covered court is something we don't even have right now in the community. So it's going to fill a big recreational hole.
Yeah.
We should push on to, speaking about recreational things, in Ponderay, the DEQ is seeking comment on the plan to clean up Black Rock. And again, Zach, you wrote the story on this in this week's Reader, but this is going to be a kind of transformative thing for Ponderay when they actually turn this into a city park.
Yeah, this is a long time coming, and it's another one of these things that on the surface looks kind of, quotidian, seeking a comment on, how to clean up this site. But what it really represents is the first move toward bringing this long time vision sort of to fruition. And that vision is to take the Ponderay Bay Trail itself was a vision that began more than a dozen years ago to establish this sort of publicly owned pathway from, sort of the Sandpoint City Beach area, where Seasons is, all the way out to Ponderay and then ultimately connecting to Kootenay. And the area cities sort of worked in collaboration for years to buy up piece by piece that sort of waterfront and lakeshore area to make what is now a 1.5-mile public walking trail that I think tons of people use.
And right along the lake, it's just gorgeous.
It's really kind of unprecedented to see a community, like a resort community in particular, lock up that much prime waterfront for public use. So it's been a real, I think, civic victory for everybody, that whole project. And now sort of the final piece has always sort of been envisioned as creating a park area and then a railroad underpass, so a pathway underneath the railroad tracks there, that connects to Ponderay so that you can literally walk from Sandpoint to Ponderay along the lake. And that final piece, as most final pieces are, has been very difficult to achieve. And now that DEQ, they got some grants and they've got, support from, I think, federal and state agencies and the city to embark on a cleanup of the Black Rock area, which is an old slag pile from when that area used to be a heavily industrialized piece of property.
There was a smelter there,
I think it was it silver and...
Silver and lead,
Something like that. I mean, we look at that area now and we think of it as being so picturesque, and beautiful, but it was really one of the industrial hearts of the area until those facilities got torn down, Humbert Mill and then the smelter area. So cleaning up this chunk of slag from the past is going to enable them to, cut down the trees. They're going to grade the place. They're going to put a cap on the slag pile. They're going to scoop up all the contaminated soil and then put a cap on it to make it.
They'll bring in new soil to replace the soil they're taking out.
That's right. And do a bunch of remediation work out there with the idea ultimately under a separate grant. So what we're talking about is just the environmental stuff right now. Like, we're not talking about design. No, there's no park. There's no underpass. Like, that's not part of this. Yep. All this is the DEQ is seeking comment until I think it's October 12th on, the cleanup itself. So no matter what, we're going to get a cleaned up Black Rock area. Now, if the park and the underpass come to fruition, that's another thing. That's going to have to be under another funding source. Pend Oreille's already received money under a federal, like U.S. Department of Transportation grant, a portion of the money to do the underpass, which is a huge project. I mean, building underneath a railroad track is incredibly difficult. So,
yeah, it's a million plus right there.
Yeah. I mean, I seem to remember from some previous reporting that, you know, it's going to be millions to build the underpass. So they have a ways to go on that. But this is a critical thing that's happening now. And once the comment period's over and then the work plan for the cleanup is approved, then they can start working out there. And they're hoping that happens by the winter. And then they can do a lot of that work during wintertime when maybe the trail isn't used so much.
And the water level's lower.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it'd be a lot easier to do it during the winter. And I think the timeline, as I remember seeing in the document, was about 12 months from construction, from start of construction. They should be finished. And then, so users of the trail during the winter will see stuff out there, but it's going to be happening at the end of the trail. So it's not like, you know, portions of the trail in between Sandpoint and Pend Oreille will be disrupted. But
You have more than a mile of lakeshore still to roam on. You guys ever been out to Black Rock? Just walk around on it.
Oh yeah,
yeah. It's when I was living in Kootenai on Whiskey Jack, we used to walk over there and actually swim there. Not even thinking about the
lead.
We're talking. Yeah. This was back in the '80s, so not even thinking about that.
Everybody had lead in their system in the '80s.
Yeah, that's right. It explains a few things about me, I'm sure.
That's another thing. I didn't quite make it into this piece, but so the Black Rock is kind of a landmark, and so in addition to, you know, cleaning this up and kind of, you know, remediating the contamination, they also are going to try to do something with sort of the capping, where they note what it is so that it's preserved as a piece of local history. So, I mean, a lot of people know that area and are fond of it. So they don't want to like completely erase it, but they want to make it safe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It is kind of a landmark. Yeah. No question. If you're on a boat or in now being on the trail, you'll be able to get to that point. So it'll be pretty cool. Yeah. We've only got a few minutes left. If we're going to stick to our 30-minute thing here, I will mention there's been a health advisory issued for Lake Kokalala because there has been cyanobacteria. It's a harmful algal bloom in the lake. And that means that actually you shouldn't be swimming there, certainly shouldn't be drinking the water. And it's even making, if you're going to fish in Lake Kokalala, they're suggesting that you get off the skin and any of the fatty parts of the fish if you're going to eat it. That's, you know, that's not an unnatural thing. It happens, but it happens when water bodies get warmer. And I think that's indicative of the fact that things are warming up around here. And I sure would hate to see that happen to a lot of our lakes. But that's an advisory for the people in Kokalala or people that use Kokalala Lake ought to be aware of.
The Idaho Ed News had a article that you guys picked up for the reader this week that the judge has upheld the ban on the use of student IDs as voter ID here in the state of Idaho. So students will need to get a state-issued voter ID, which is supposed to be issued for free by the state, but you cannot go and use your student ID even if it has a picture on it.
Kind of hate to see any kind of restrictions on voting, but I don't think that was used a whole heck of a lot as a type of ID.
A lot of this issue, to me anyway, has felt like a solution in search of a problem.
Yeah.
But, you know, it is what it is. You can still get a state ID. It's just another step you got to take.
Mm-hmm. And then the elections are coming up. The forum, again, is on the 17th. Zach, do you know anything about... Is everybody coming to the forum? Have you started to hear back from the invited candidates on who's going to be there or anything like that?
Well, my section of that event is to kind of wrangle the city candidates, and I have heard from every one of them that they will do the questionnaire, and I think only one of them won't be able to be there in person as far as I know, but we'll be trying to zoom that person in if we can do that. But I'm not in charge of the technicalities. I think Chris and our publisher Ben Olson are kind of the bosses of that. I'm just going to cover it.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have it. Ben's been in touch with all of them, and I think they're all going to be there. Certainly hope so. It's an opportunity for them to to let the voters know what they're all about. Since we're running out of time, I want to mention a couple things. First, thanks to Evergreen Realty for sponsoring the show. Mm-hmm. They're the underwriter specifically for this show. Evergreen Realty, they have an office actually downstairs of our studio here on First Avenue. I will mention one thing. I wanted to throw a shout out that if you want to be engaged and an informed member of our community, you know, read your newspaper.
Right.
The reader is around. It's free. Subscribe to the Daily Bee. I just saw their annual subscription report, and their subscription numbers are down again, as is the trend. Maybe we'll have a whole show devoted to that sometime, the fact that local media is really suffering. So if you want to keep these institutions alive where you don't have to go spend 3 hours at a council meeting,
right,
you pay somebody like Zach to go there and then distill it into a story you can read in 10 minutes and get the important stuff out of that meeting. That's what the part of the role that that newspapers and the media serve for us. And speaking of that, let's throw a shout out for the fact that KRFY itself is having an online auction fundraiser ongoing right now through Sunday, October 8th. And you can go to our website, KRFY.org, and you'll find a link. It'll take you off to a bidding for good. And there are auction items, including a tropical island condo, a sailboat excursion, a Schweitzer gift basket, bottles of fine wines, and a whole bunch of other stuff. You can probably find a deal there, but finding a deal isn't the purpose we put it out there for. This is a big source of funding for KRFY. So go check it out. If you bid, that money goes straight to our operations here. We're mostly volunteer run, and we would really appreciate it. So check us out at KRFY.org, the online auction fundraiser.
That's right. You owe it to us to at least check it out. You don't have to buy anything if you don't see anything you don't like, but at least go and look at what we got, because there's a ton of stuff there.
Yeah, and it took a lot of time to get all that stuff together. Thank you to all the folks and all the organizations and businesses that donated to that.
Yeah, and any bid helps. We are now, as usual, over time, so let's continue with Otto's Eclectic Mix and all day long right here on Panhandle Community Radio. We are going to start off with a little something by the Allman Brothers called Blue Sky, because it seems appropriate.
It is blue out there.
All right, that's it. Have a nice weekend.
Have a great week, folks.
Okay.